Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC from the Aspen Ideas Festival today with the sound of the roaring Fork River in the background. I've got two participants here with me, Majora Carter, Bronx community activist, founder of Sustainable South Bronx. She's been with us before in New York. MacArthur Genius Fellow. She's also won a prestigious award just recently having to do with public radio, which we'll tell you about. And also with us, Van Jones, a human rights and environmental activist. And together, they have just founded an organization called Green for All, and we'll talk about that. Their goals, advocating for a clean environment for everyone of all races and socioeconomic levels, and development of green-collar jobs. So, Majora Carter, welcome back, and Van Jones, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's start with the green-collar jobs. You started Green for All, which aims to create green jobs across the country. Tell us about it, Van. What's the point? How are you going about it?
Well, sure. Well, one of the things that has to happen is if we're going to beat global warming, if we're going to get energy prices down, we're going to have to really retrofit, reboot, re-energize the whole country. You got to retrofit a nation to conserve more energy and to use cleaner energy. People talk about that in terms of polar bears. They talk about it in terms of technology. We talk about it in terms of the incredible level of jobs that have to be created. We have all this work that needs to be done to put up solar panels on buildings across the country, to weatherize buildings so they don't leak so much energy. There are all these people who need work. So we want to connect the people who most need work with the work that most needs to be done, fight pollution and poverty at the same time.
How do you do that, Majora?
The way we've been doing it, you know, in the South Bronx, we run an ecological restoration job training program that trains people in the skills of ecological restoration, things that need to get done, you know, whether it's urban forestry management, whether it's wetland restoration, you know, all along in New York City parks. Once you give people the hard skills to do that and the job training and make that happen, what you've created are folks that have both a personal and a financial stake in the betterment of the environment.
So someone from Morrisania comes up to you and says, I'd like a green-collar job. How does he or she get one?
They go through a two-day tryout period where they get we test their physical aptitude, you know, as well as their leadership ability. And then once they pass that, then they go through our program for 10 weeks and they learn a whole bunch of skills, ecological restoration and otherwise, that'll prepare them, you know, for a job in the green-collar field.
Summer's here, obviously, around the city. You can see ads telling high schoolers to call 311 for summer employment. Do you have any advice for young people who are interested in green summer jobs in particular?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, green summer jobs are important, but we also are passionate about green careers and, and green pathways out of poverty to prosperity. This is not going to be something that happens overnight. We're going to have to, we didn't get into this situation where we're using all this carbon and creating global warming in a day or a year or a decade. So this is a long-term solution. And what we hope that young people will be doing is looking at green career pathways. You can go from being an energy auditor where you just go into a building with a clipboard and try to find out, you know, hey, you know, where is the energy leaking out here? Is this refrigerator the right kind of refrigerator? Is it up to date? Should we wrap this hot water heater with a blanket or blow in some insulation? And that could be a job for a teenager, literally, that could then lead to a whole career in the energy profession, you know, going on to becoming a technician to put in the solar panels or a green worker who can retrofit the building. So I think it's what we really need is for our community colleges, our vocational schools, all of our job training infrastructure is still training our young people to stand in the back of the line for the last century's pollution-based jobs. We want to start greening our job training infrastructure to get our people in the front of the line, our young people in the front of the line for the new clean and green jobs.
When we think about environmental activists, I think people still think about a very white field, and it's about coming to a place like Aspen and looking around at the beautiful mountains and saying, let's preserve the national forest here so it doesn't get developed. Or these days it's about pondering whether we should be drinking bottled water anymore because of the plastic piling up in the landfills and everything like that, you know. But maybe that doesn't relate so much to lower income people of color. Is this where you come in?
Well, you know, it's, gosh, we have to think about the fact that, you know, the mainstream, you know, environmental movement, we're trying to make sure that it includes everybody. And that does include poor people of color, those that have been traditionally sort of left out of the environmental mainstream. But again, going forward, you know, since we've never been in this crisis situation before, it's going to take everybody. I feel like we need to do a bit more to make sure that the work that we're doing is integrated as part of the environmental movement. Mm-hmm. That it's not just, this isn't just environmental justice, this isn't just green jobs, this is the environmental movement and the direction that it has to go in if
that
we're going to go forward.
It's all part of one big
mm-hmm.
piece.
Exactly.
Right. And I think one of the things that's so exciting about the work that Majora has been doing is it's really changing the definition of what environmentalism is and expanding the coalition for environmental
exactly.
solutions. If it's just, you know, not to cast aspersions on anybody, but if it's just the eco-elite mm-hmm. who can afford to put solar panels on their second home or can afford to buy a Prius or two, then we won't have enough people involved to actually make the changes we want to make. So we need those people who've been the pioneers, mm-hmm. who've been willing to pay that extra green premium to get these industries started, to get these technologies moving. But now it's time to expand that coalition, to bring more people in. The green economy shouldn't only be a place for affluent people to spend money. Mm-hmm. It should also be a place for ordinary people to earn some money. And it should also be a place for low-income people to save some money through weatherization. Let's put the solar panels, as Majora says, let's green the ghetto first. Let's put the solar panels on those low-income people's homes first, bring their energy bills down first. So there's a whole green growth agenda, a social uplift, environmentalism that I think is, you know, kind of starts with the sustainable South Bronx, but it's really now sweeping the country.
And how's sustainable South Bronx going? What do you think has actually changed in the neighborhood as a result of your work over how many years now with that organization?
Seven
years.
Yeah. The biggest changes are the changes that we see in the lives of people that feel as though, but often before they go through our program, that they didn't really have anything to contribute. But now they know that they are real active contributors to the betterment of their own society and their lives as well. And that gives me more pride than, and there have been a lot of things. Like we've been, you know, we were responsible for the green roof tax abatement in the state legislature last week, more sustainable solid waste management plan that was just signed into law just a little while ago. We've got lots of things to be proud of. But the thing that I'm really most proud of is the fact that people's lives have been turned around in ways that they didn't even know could happen a little while ago.
Majora Carter and Van Jones with me on WNYC from Aspen, founders of Green for All, and Majora, founder of Sustainable South Bronx. Van, in a global context, when you talk about the carbon footprint, there are people in developing countries who say, look, if you're talking about a shot at affluence, the United States and Western Europe and some other places have had it, in part through their pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And don't restrict our right to be able to join the global middle class by saying we now have to adhere to these carbon footprint standards, you know, from the problem that they gave us.
Sure.
Is this an issue you think about?
Sure, I do. It's a question of basic fairness. We have to bring certain people's consumption up mm-hmm. to a dignified level.
Right.
We have to bring certain people's energy use up to a dignified level. And we have to bring other people's consumption down to mm-hmm. a dignified level and bring their energy use down to a dignified level. And that is the big challenge of the new century, is how to do that in a fair way. But what I think we have to be very clear about is that we want our sisters and brothers in Africa and Latin America and Asia to be smarter than we've been in the West. We want them to leapfrog the pollute now, repair later stage because it's a more expensive
exactly.
and wasteful way to go forward. If you want to grow your economy, much better to grow it on a renewable energy platform. Why? Prices don't go up. You put up the solar panels, you've got a stable platform for your energy prices.
Yeah.
If you hitch your wagon to this carbon, oil, fossil fuel, dead dinosaur-based energy strategy, you know one thing, those prices will continue to go up
yep.
as those resources continue to diminish. I think it's wrong for our people around the world to go the way we went. Let's help them go a better way.
Exactly.
Nobody can create a speculative bubble in sunshine.
That's right.
So, Majora, at the at the mass level, when you talk about green-collar jobs, people may hear that as an abstraction. Are there certain kinds of green-collar jobs that you think could be the most common that people can do? You know, like the mass jobs that we think of in the civil service today, teachers and police officers and all of that. Is there an equivalent in the green field coming up?
I mean, I think all jobs, that we're going to have to push toward a time when all jobs are green. But the other thing is that there are some just right now that could actually support cities and their bottom lines in terms of looking at the kind of environmental payback that environmental services pay. So when you're talking about greening a city and you plant more street trees and you do plant more green roofs and you install more solar panels, and then you're cleaning the air, you're attracting storm water, you're giving people jobs, you're keeping them, you know, out of our out of our prison justice system, because in many cases we now know that there's a huge link between poverty and incarceration. You know, the poorer you are, that's what happens. So you want to make sure that you're, and we also know that that's a very expensive way, you know, to house people. However, if we're working to create more opportunities so that people are doing those things as jobs, then the benefits to the city comes back in a number of ways, in stormwater management costs, public health costs, because the air is getting cleaner, and people are actually doing work.
But what are those jobs? What are the green-collar jobs of the future that a lot of people will do?
That's good. Well, you know, it's amazing. We talk about green-collar jobs. People often automatically think about Buck Rogers, you know, some crazy, you know, somebody, I guess, on a satellite beaming sun, you know, solar. I don't know what people think. We're talking about really amazingly outlandish technology like caulk guns, okay? Like, you know, hammers, nails, you know, insulation, hammer, what do you call it, hose, rakes. So that we can begin to have urban garden. We can begin to do green construction. You know, if we begin to have green roofs and urban gardening, we can begin to bring horticulture back into the city. There's jobs. If we're going to beat global warming, we got to plant millions of trees and take care of them. Those are millions of jobs. If we're going to weatherize millions of buildings, you're talking about a huge boom in the building trades. Yeah. So we're talking about Joe Sixpack type jobs.
Yeah.
That, but imagine a green hard hat and a tool belt that includes the ability to put up those solar panels.
Does the education system also have to educate differently for a green-collar workforce?
I mean, definitely. We're on the community college level. In high school, we definitely want to start seeing some of this work being integrated in curriculums, even starting even much earlier than that, so that folks realize that this is actually a career path and not just some pie in the sky kind of thing, but actually people are on the ground doing it right now. There's different ways that could provide other opportunities into other kind of pathways as well.
A piece of green roof legislation just passed in the New York State Assembly. The bill would take 25% off the cost of a green roof from a property owner's property tax bill. Were you following that? Were you working for that? Majora, does that make it affordable?
Yeah. A Sustainable South Bronx actually co-founded the coalition called SWIM, which stands for Stormwater Infrastructure Matters, which I think had, like, at last count, like 60 different groups around the city that were working on making that happen. So the whole idea is to create, you know, like the regulations and the policies so that we can build a market around it. Like, we're so excited about that. And we've actually started a green roof installation business to make sure that we're working to build the market in a different way.
What about folks who rent? Is there any incentive for landlords in this? Do you know?
You know, I wasn't involved in that piece, really. Majora led on that issue. But what I do know is that really across the country, people, you know, mayors, city councils, community college boards, workforce investment boards, state legislators are trying to link now the ecological solutions with the community economic development solutions, trying to create a more seamless pathway. If you're a green job seeker, you should be able to find a green job training program that can connect you with a green job. And if we just keep focused on that, we will transition ourselves from an economy that has a lot of poor people and a lot of pollution to an economy that has a lot of people working and cleaner air, cleaner water. And that's what this represents. This represents another step in that direction.
Yep.
There's a federal green jobs bill, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, there is. We are really proud. We have a number of partners that we've worked with, you know, the Workforce Alliance, the Apollo Alliance, the Center for American Progress, and other organizations to get the Green Jobs Act funded this year. Nancy Pelosi worked very hard with us, Senator Clinton, Senator Sanders, to get smuggled into the energy bill that George Bush signed, something called the Green Jobs Act of 2007, Title 10. And it authorized $125 million to begin putting federal dollars behind the job training. We're now working very hard to get that money authorized. Anybody who wants to help us do that should go to greenforall.org. No numerals, all letters. greenforall.org. Sign up and help us get this legislation, this first path-breaking federal legislation, funded.
What do you say to people who like the idea of a green city and clean energy, but say, gosh, it's all so expensive? Mm-hmm. It's more money right now outside of my pocket.
Sure. Well, I mean, what we would say to that is, you know, you can pay a little bit now, or you can pay a whole lot later. Energy prices are not going to come down, and the ecological cost of going the way we've been going are going to continue to go up. And so what we found is that, unfortunately, we still live as if it's the 1800s. All of our economic models were based in the 1800s, where you have a few people and a whole lot of nature. So you had people talking about, oh, we have, you know, unlimited resources, you know. And now we have an awful lot of people, very little nature. Things are going, we have to be smarter about how we use our resources. A little bit of investment right now, for instance, in the kind of stuff Majora is talking about, you know, green solutions for stormwater, will save you billions of dollars in flooding and pipes and all kinds of stuff down the road.
And why come to Aspen? Are panels really important to the work you're doing? Is it a networking thing?
It is absolutely a networking thing, and helping people understand that there are these amazing opportunities out there, you know, as represented by us. So just help people see that there's a different way of looking at this. I think it's really important, because you've got some of the best minds and best thinkers that are here, and, you know, we think we've got something to contribute to that.
And I'm asking everybody, what's one idea you've heard here at the Aspen Ideas Festival outside your own area? Have you had a chance?
Yeah, I was just in a really interesting panel where they were talking about mega communities and using this whole concept or this whole way of getting people from the business community, government, and not-for-profit groups working together to solve problems. And that idea that you could have, you know, really no center, it's not like it's going to be business-dominated or government-dominated, I found that really fascinating. And I think that what's beginning to happen is that we are beginning to move in a direction where more partnership in problem solving is going to be the norm.
Now, Majora Carter, listeners of WNYC know your voice for years in conjunction with Sustainable South Bronx, as you've been on this show and other places on the station. But in all of your pictures, you are always wearing the same thing, and people on the radio can't see it, but it's a big, joyful smile. And when people think activism, sometimes it evokes images of a dreadfully small, dark office where everyone is overworked and kind of with a dreary earnestness. You know, are you trying to put a new face on some of that?
Yes, actually. I mean, I think it helps that, you know, two leaders of the green economy and pushing for it, Van and I, are two extraordinarily good-looking people, and because it's easy. It's true. I mean, people do.
Since it's radio, nobody can
exactly
disprove it.
But it's true. Take my word for it. He's stunning. And but the point is that people do. I mean, people are tired of being talked at. You know, they want to feel like they can do great things too. And I think that's what is so special about, you know, our version of this new kind of environmentalism in the green economy. Everybody gets to play. Everybody gets to win. And that's what being an activist to me is all about. Like, how do you make sure that everybody feels that they can actually be a part of it and actually benefit from it?
Van Jones, Stud Muffin Activist. That's your new title, right?
No comment on the previous
piece. I know.
But I do. But
I love embarrassing me. He's my little brother.
Van Jones and Majora Carter are co-founders of Green for All. Majora is also founder of Sustainable South Bronx. Still going strong. Thank you both very much for joining us at Aspen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.